What's up, Wolves fans? Welcome to the Monday night edition of It's Brewing at McEwen. I am your host this evening, Adam Cartwright, and with me, as always, on Monday nights is my co-host this evening, Matthew Giardino. Matt, man, how are you doing tonight?
Doing good, not too bad for a Monday. Obviously, would have liked to seen a better result from Saturday and Sunday's game, but overall, Bulls are 8-4 in conference play and still are in a position to make some moves.
Absolutely. Well, it was a little bit of a bummer weekend, but like you said, there is some positive outs outlook out positive aspects to the weekend. One positive thing, we do have a very special guest with us this evening. Bulls fans, you're familiar with him. You've heard him on the call, both radio and television, for USF Bulls games of multitudes of sports. He's also the host of the Jay Retcher podcast. With us this evening is Jay Retcher. Jay, man, first of all, thank you for being with us, and how are you doing tonight?
I'm great, man. Thank you guys so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. Well, first off, I just want to kind of kick it over to you here for a little bit on your background. Just kind of walk us through the story. What kind of brought you to this point, covering USF and your interest in just Tampa Bay sports in general?
I moved here from New York when I was 20, so it'll be about 20 years ago, in September. But yeah, I came down here and started coaching baseball, did that for 8 years before I ever got into radio, and then did radio for 10 years. But about halfway through my radio tenure, I got linked up with USF and started doing some football, pre and post game coverage. And then I started hosting, excuse me, doing play by play and color commentary. So did that for a couple of girls' basketball games, and then for the last couple of years, baseball and softball. So really cool because, for coaching baseball for 8 years in the Tampa Bay area, I see kids that I coached along the way. So I actually coached against Bulls first baseman Sebastian Greco when he was like 6 or 7 years old. So I've known Sebastian for a very long time. But yeah, just love being involved with USF and looking to be even more involved with them here the rest of 2025. So yeah, exciting. I mean, I'm really jacked up about this season. I had a great relationship with the last regime, but with Mitch Hanis coming in here now, and I'm just really excited. And I think that there's a lot of bases being covered, pun definitely, that we didn't maybe see in the years past. And this team is finding ways to win. I know we're coming off of a rough weekend, but I have full confidence that Coach Mitch Hanis and Coach Daniel Schlereth and the rest of the crew over there are going to be able to right the ship and Bulls get back to their winning ways this week.
Yeah, and when I think about that too, it's just a completely different feeling this particular season too. It's even like you said, we didn't have the best weekend this past weekend, but you feel like the guys are gonna get it together and bounce back. And we've seen some aspects of this team that I think in previous years we haven't seen. So definitely think that everybody's gonna get back on track here shortly.
Yeah, agreed. And you see it already so far this year where there was that two Fridays in a row where they won games, but behind the arm of Corey Brown, and then Saturday giving up 6 runs in the first inning, back-to-back home weekends. And it was like, all right, well, identify the problem and then fix it. And Coach Mitch Hanis understands that, and I love that about him. About he's an old school guy. He's not going to use analytics maybe as much as other people. He's going to go with his gut. He's going to go with his eyes. He's going to believe in his players. And yeah, it's a that throwback mentality. I mean, just think about it. I mean, I don't know if many people really had high hopes for South Florida, outside of the Tampa Bay area. But what their record is right now, I think you were pleasantly surprised. And just imagine if Coach Mitch Hanis is here for a couple more years and he's able to get more of his type players. I think this team's going to be a force in the American.
Yeah, definitely ahead of schedule so far, and I think one of the things that I appreciate about him so much is just the fact that he's the first guy out of the dugout if he feels like one of his players was wronged or slighted in any way. He's always there to have his guys back too.
Yeah, it's a great point because you see that sometimes when, it happens on a bad call, but you also see it too when he goes to the mound. So pitching coach Daniel Schlereth, he goes out there to talk to the pitchers when it's more of a mechanical type of thing and when he's making the pitching changes. But there's certain times that we've seen so far this year where the game's hanging in the balance or the team just needs an overall, hey, deep breath. Let's relax. Let's get on the same page. And that's when Coach Mitch Hanis goes out there. And it's almost less of a pitching change and more of just a chat with the infield. I love that. I love that he's got his finger on the pulse of this team And that's how he manages. And it's a joy to watch him do what he does. I haven't had one point this year where I'm like, what the heck is this guy thinking? And me being an old baseball coach, that's natural to me sometimes, but I think he's pushing all the right buttons. And I don't know if there's many other coaches that would have the record that USF has this year that that Mitch Hanus has.
Yeah, and just to add on that too, just with his visits to the mound, I think one thing I noticed too is he always makes sure to bring the guys to the present moment and make sure that they know of the situation. You know, whether there's one out and a force out, and there's a potential for a double play. And it's funny, a lot of times, you know, they end up getting the double play and getting out of the inning. So definitely, that's a big aspect of it too.
Absolutely. And I have to agree with you, Jay, on your stance on the direction of the team so far. I do actually have to point out when you going back into your bio there, I spent some time coaching high school baseball in Florida as well, about eight
Nice.
seasons. And it is kind of weird. I think my last season was in 2022. And so at a young age, I actually coached Kellen Lindsey, who was the first round pick of the Dodgers this past June. I guess a year ago now almost. And then Carson Masioka, who's at Florida now, as a relief pitcher. But it is weird kind of seeing these kids because you see them at such a young age, and then you see the almost grown men that you see on TV, and
Right.
it's kind of crazy.
It is.
We will begin looking at this weekend. Again, we're going to get the expert insight of Jay this week, so that's going to be a huge bonus. Friday night, again, bit of a roller coaster for Bulls fans this weekend. Huge, huge Friday night. Corey Brown will get his fifth win of the season. As we usually do, we will start with the pitchers. And as the guest, Jay, I'll kind of let you start. Corey Brown launches another great outing. What did you think so far?
Just another performance from him where he's just a bulldog, man. He really is. He's just such a joy to watch do his thing. 5-2 on the season. I'd be very surprised if he wasn't one of those guys at the end of the season that is, up for, conference pitcher of the year. And somebody asked me last week, what do you think about Corey Brown? I go, I see him pitching in the big leagues. He's a left-handed pitcher. He's got multiple pitches. He pitches behind. He'll be behind in the count, and it's not like, oh, I'm gonna throw you a fastball because it's a 2-1 count. He'll throw you a multitude of off-speed pitches. He comes inside, all the things that you would want in a pitcher, he does. And he didn't have his like best strikeout stuff against Rice either. And that's the thing, is that he has the ability to get outs when he doesn't have his best stuff. And I can't say enough nice things about this kid. And I think I just. Yeah, he's the perfect guy to start on Friday night because even if he's not throwing a complete game shutout like he did a couple of weeks ago, he's going to be able to go to Rice. And I know their record isn't great, but this is a very historic baseball program. And for him to be able to start, he's doing all he can on Friday nights to set the Bulls' weekends off on a high note, and he did that same thing this past weekend there in the Lone Star State.
Absolutely. A lot of buzzwords you use there that that me and Matt have been using talking about Corey Brown all year. Matt, I'll kick it over to you now. What'd you think about the pitching?
I think if it weren't for the fact that the Bulls scored 7 runs in the top of the eighth and ended up getting the run rule victory there, I think Corey Brown probably could have gone a complete game on Friday as well. Only 88 total pitches, so he was pitching really efficiently as well. So really good to see that continuing that success, especially in conference play, getting us off to a good start on Friday. And also a shout out to Nolan Bernard, who came in after Corey and pitched a scoreless inning. Also didn't give up any hits, any walks, and did record a strikeout. So kudos to Nolan and Corey on the performance.
Yeah, that is kudos to Nolan because you kind of got to be ready there. You don't know if Braun's going to go out there for the eighth.
Right.
His pitch count would certainly indicate that he would, and then things kind of fall apart for Rice there in the eighth. And that's kind of how I can describe it when you're watching that eighth inning. You wondered there for a second if Rice was going to be able to get an out with some of the errors they were making, but they did. They turned it around. We're able to get out of the inning, but certainly that long inning you think affected Braun's ability to go the full the full game. But the thing about Braun, I think, is really refreshing as a fan is that I think every Friday night he takes the mound, you think, this guy could throw the whole game. He could pitch this whole 9-inning game. I think in years past we've kind of just been hoping that our starters can get six, and I don't think we have that feeling with Corey Braun, and that's pretty awesome. Any final thoughts on Corey Braun, Jay or Matt?
Nah, love the guy, and I can't wait to see him pitch again.
Absolutely, absolutely. We know we'll see him next Friday. I do one note for Rice before we move on the pitching. Friday night they did throw JD McCracken, who was not their typical Friday night guy. The typical Friday night guy is Davion Hixon. I think they had mentioned a suspension was the reason for that. So again, Rice kind of playing off kilter there. But it was a great night for the Bulls offense. Ryan Pruitt has a four-hit performance. Matt Rose has a four-hit performance. Hits all around the field. What stood out to you, Jay?
I just think you're getting when you it just seemed like every 2 seconds you look up and somebody was hitting another home run. But I look at the offense and you look at the guy in the two hole. I think Carlos Hakamé, inserting him into the starting lineup, has really done wonders to this team because you get a little bit more athletic there at second base. He's a professional at bat, batting towards the bottom of the lineup, and he's in this game he's batting second. So that just shows that the trust that Coach Hannes has in him to put him up there. And also, Matt Rose was a guy that he might have been a man without a man without of a country there. He gets a starting spot taken away, and Carter Murphy was playing third early on in the season, but Matt didn't hang his head, and he just kept playing, just kept balling, and kudos to him because he plays his tail off and he doesn't ever kind of give in, even in tough outings. And then the other guy that stands out is Rafael Betancourt. I mean, I was flabbergasted how there was, for a long part of the beginning of the season, this kid didn't have a home run. He didn't have an RBI. He didn't have nothing. Every single time he got up there, it was either nobody was on base, it was after a home run, or he lined out to somebody. Like, he had the worst luck for like the first 3 weeks of the season, and now he's coming alive. And this was the guy that had preseason honors. He was the only guy that had preseason honors for the USF. And man, he is. I mean, you look at what he was able to do on Friday night, and it's exciting. It's exciting for him because I think you look at this lineup with his ability to be a switch hitter, I think it lengthens it a little bit. And it just gives Coach Hannes a lot of options of how he's going to put these, because I think we're kind of settled in to these nine. We've seen this is you're pretty much your starting nine. So now it's just, all right, are you going to put Pruitt up there? Who's going to bat in the two hole? Maybe you put Rose up there, Brad Key. If you're facing a lefty, does that change how you deploy some of these guys that, you have Greco and Mayo and Brodell, and you have a lot of these guys that are just purely lefty. So, but it's a good problem to have when you go look at your lineup and, on a Friday night to start off the series, you have 18 hits.
Absolutely. I think the Betancourt we've seen kind of these last, maybe week and a half, 2 weeks is kind of that Betancourt that we saw when he kind of broke out as a freshman and started hitting, I think, 310, 315 around that time. Kind of battled some injuries after that. You're hoping maybe he's kind of getting back to that form. Matt, what stood out to you, man?
Yeah, I think the thing that really stands out is, like you guys already mentioned, is Rafael Betancourt. And over his past 15 games, he's hitting over 400. So, like Jay said too, I think a lot of the early struggles he had in the season were just the overall batting average on balls in play was not that high. He wasn't striking out a ton, but just not getting as lucky as he could have. And the thing is too is I talked to him sometimes, and he said that one thing that wasn't going to change was his mindset. He was going to continue to stay positive, and he never got down on himself, and now it's paying off, and I'm really happy to see that for him.
Absolutely. It is really awesome to see. One thing I wanted to ask about, Jay, you mentioned Brad Keylory. I mean, how about him defensively? What has stood out to you? I mean, it stood out to you. He's made some really fantastic plays. He's been fun to watch, is he not?
He's just amazing. I mean, another Tampa kid I've known for a very long time, Jesuit high school product, and to see his journey and all the different places that he's went. But yeah, he's the guy that when the balls hit to him, and he doesn't have like the craziest arm, or he's not like the fastest guy in the world. But that just shows you that Infield play, above all else, is about instincts. It's about instincts. It's about getting good reads on the ball. And, he does it all. He can make the play coming in. He can make the play going back, up the middle, backhand. He can leave his feet and get up and make a throw. He can catch pop-ups in the shallow outfield. You sometimes don't appreciate a guy like that who can do what he can do defensively until you don't have him. And when you have a shortstop that makes a bunch of boneheaded plays and makes a bunch of mistakes and doesn't make the routine plays, you start pining for a guy like Brad Killori. So, yeah, again, this is another piece of the puzzle that Coach Mitchanis has put together that shows, like, hey, this is a way we can win a game. You can win a game with your glove, right? You can find a way, and we've seen it this so far this year, where games where teams are. And listen, I think we can all agree that pitching is where this team needs to really improve from one year to the next. And I would expect that coach is going to be really looking to fortify the pitching side going into next season. Part of the reason why the pitchers have been able to kind of Houdini out of some of this damage this year is because they've been playing to their strengths, which is put the ball on the ground, keep the ball down, turn some double plays. And when USF has been able to do that, especially at home, I think back to that series against Maryland where, man, Maryland came into this and everybody was like, wow, these guys tear the cover off the ball. They were top 10 in home runs. They had one home run in three games. And big reason why is because when they had an opportunity to turn a double play or when they had an opportunity to make a play, they did that. So that's what good teams do. And even if this team is, a little ahead of the curve, like you said, Adam, and maybe, ahead of schedule, ahead of the curve, whatever, we'll take it, man, because they're winning. And they're finding different ways to win. So that's a positive sign going forward. And Brad Key is that guy, man. He's that guy. He's in the middle of it all.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, I was gonna say we'll add in there too. I think one thing to consider too is even though Coach Hanna's got a late start to the recruiting cycle, I will say I think it's the most volume of pitchers in our rotation or in our pitching staff that throw consistently over 92, 93 that I've seen in the 5+ years that I've been following the team. So even though we had a short timetable in terms of recruiting, the overall talent that he was able to bring in such a short amount of time, I think is really impressive too.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. I think one point I was going to make about Laurie is, we mentioned the kind of the success that that Corey Braun has had. Well, you're going to need a guy like Laurie that can make the plays that he's made to win on Friday night because, the other team's going to be throwing, their version of Corey Braun or who they think is Corey Braun. And so they're going to be tight games. We've seen tight games on Friday night. And so I don't know. He's just been really fun to watch. I think the best thing about him is in our group chat, there's been a few times where, he'll make a play, they don't really talk about it because he makes it look, and it's what I'm saying. He made that look really easy. Like that was not a very easy play that he made look really easy because of things like you said, the instincts, being in position, that pre-prep step, and then kind of reading the swing. He's just really, really good, really fun to watch. Well, that is kind of where the fun will end for USF
Right.
as we move on to Saturday. It's something about this team. We've seen it twice. We get the run rule and then we turn around and we let it happen to us. Unfortunately, Austin Newton will have to wear the loss in this one. He did not pitch bad at all. The just offense was not up to par. We'll talk about them in a minute. Jay, what'd you think? It was Austin Newton's debut. We've kind of been waiting on him. He's a guy we've known from the past. What'd you think about his start?
Yeah, I think it was a start in the right direction. I mean, you're going to get opportunities, and we've seen this the last couple of weeks. Is, I think Coach Coach Hennes had an idea going into the season. This is what I think my rotation is going to look like. I remember even speaking about a guy like Bryce Archie, and he's like, "Yeah, she's going to be a midweek guy," and then 2 weeks later, he's pitching on the weekend. Because you just don't know what's going to happen, man. Baseball's such a funny sport like that, and you've seen. All right, well, he was trying to do what he's been doing the last couple of weekends, where he'll have almost like an opener, kind of what we've seen with the Rays, in the years past, and then go to a guy like Jorge Descardenas, and it just didn't work out, and Jorge did not have his best stuff. He gets a lot of swing and miss, but when he's almost, I think at times it's better for him to maybe be a little bit effectively wild. But only one walk, which is good. He was in the zone, but unfortunately gave up eight hits. So These are just kind of the growing pains I think that a young team has to go through. And when you're a team like USF, you have to learn how to really hit the ground running. And unfortunately for them, that's one of their biggest things that they've not done this year is be able to carry over some of that momentum from Corey Brown from Friday to Saturday. It's getting better where they're not giving up six in the top or bottom of the first, but still, it's something where Coach Machanis talks about playing mad, playing angry. I think another thing is like playing focus, understanding that you got to play Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, right? Like it's the last game that you're going to play all season. And, that's just unfortunately, that's not something that happens overnight. It takes time. And you have to go through situations like this where you lose to a team that doesn't even have 10 wins on the season quite yet. So, a rough growing pain to watch. And I'm sure it was a lot even more difficult to experience if you were rocking the green and gold this weekend.
Absolutely. Definitely not the outing that Duke Cardenas is going to want to remember for very long. Matt, I'll kick it over to you. What did you think about the pitching on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, it was great to see Austin Newton come back. He was looking pretty good with his velo. He last pitch he threw out of his outing, he popped out at 95 miles per hour. So he looks like he's healthy and ready to contribute to the team. Really excited about that. And then for Jorge, I feel bad for him. Definitely not his best stuff. He was kind of left out there to dry, but at the same time, we did need someone to eat up some of those innings, especially with our current structure of our pitching staff. But I believe in his stuff. I think he's going to have a bounce back outing. We've seen what he can do already this season, and I'm sure that he'll be able to flush that memory out pretty quickly. But overall, it was a tough game to watch for Bulls fans. But one thing I do want to do is give a shout out to Elch Tucker on Rice. He pitched really well. Really controlled our lineup for the entirety of his outing and did it really efficiently as well. He only pitched 43 pitches in 4.1 innings. And then we got to see their Friday night guy, Davion Hixon, and he didn't do all that great, but I mean, once you're up by 11 runs or whatever it was going into when he came in, you really don't need to have your best stuff.
Yeah, I think both of you have said, I'll just kind of piggyback. It was a great kind of debut for Austin Newton. I think what's most important about that is, with this opener, I've called it an extended opener because I feel like, this opener is kind of trying to go get through maybe three innings, nine outs, one time through versus, an opener maybe going out there for one inning. And so, but I think just like the opener situation with the Rays, it's something that you utilize out of necessity, not necessarily because you think this is our best foot forward. And what you're hoping to get out of this is somebody really kind of progress to a point to be in a guy that you can throw out there for six or seven plus innings. Hopefully, Austin Newton coming off of injury is somebody that can take that opportunity and kind of grow and be that guy, come tournament time when we're going to need him. Overall, like you guys said, we threw in the zone. We did not miss the strike zone. We just unfortunately did not miss many barrels either. And so sometimes when that happens, you got to tip your hat to Rice. I mean, 14 hits, we throw strikes, they got to hit them. They definitely hit them, like you said too, Matt, it was a little awkward on their side because Hixon has kind of been their Friday night guy, their best guy, and I felt like we were kind of getting our most success against him. Even with the three strikeouts, you thought like we had some stuff going against him. But again, I think that could play into the awkward kind of rotation. He's not, well, I guess to an extent, because his background is as a closer. So you would think maybe he's a little more accustomed to that situation, but not this season. So it is what it is. Unfortunately, the offensive side did not carry over. Only three hits on this game. Not many strikeouts either. Just kind of maybe some bad luck. We did have some debuts in this one. Jacob Green gets an opportunity. What'd you think offensively, or maybe from the position player perspective, Jay?
Yeah, I think this is an opportunity for guys like Dawson Mock and Anthony Quigley. Like you're seeing these guys, and you mentioned Jacob Green. This is what good programs do. Good programs They pepper these guys in, they give them an at bat here, an at bat there, and then you earn it. You earn more and more. You saw it with Stewart Puckett earlier this year as well. I have no problem with this. I think it makes a lot of sense. Get these guys in. And, I'm also keeping a keen eye on, you see, Matthew Buffington was able to come in and hit for Lance Triple. I'm very curious to see how much Lance Triple plays down the stretch because he has played a ton. He has played a lot. And I'm just keeping a keen eye on, is there almost a downshift a little bit of, having him play, get him off his feet when we get closer to conference play because he's played so much. And it's one thing if you're a catcher, that's one thing if you play two games, one thing if you play three games, but he's also a guy that he uses his speed too, right? He beats, it seems like every game he's beating out a ground ball or he's going first to third or he's hitting a triple or an inside the park home run. Like Lance Triple's not getting many easy days offensively, forget about defensively. So, yeah, I mean, when the season is over, I hope Coach Machanas buys him a trip to Tahiti or something. The kid deserves it. He's been busting his ass for this team. But yeah, I like to see some of these younger guys get opportunities as well.
Absolutely, and I really love watching an athletic catcher, a la Buster
Right.
Posey. Although I think Triple's got he's a little faster than Posey. Maybe not in college. I don't know. He can move a little bit when he was younger. But Matt,
Both
what do you
went to
think of
Florida State. Well, so
both of
there's a
those?
common.
Matt, what do you think, man?
Yeah, like you guys were saying, really cool to see Dawson Mock come in the game, get a base hit, and Anthony Quigley. There's always going to be negatives in a loss, but when you can take away some positives and get those young guys some at bats, and they actually do something positive with those at bats, it's always a small victory, even in a loss. And adding to that too, in terms of Matt Buffington, he did get an at bat and got a walk and scored a run, so. Definitely good to see those guys get an opportunity and do the most that they could with it.
For sure.
Absolutely, and you mentioned Triple and Jay, I think you hit it right on the head. The thing about Triple is that he is not a traditional catcher in the sense that he catches, he swings the bat, he tries to hit it far so he doesn't have to run very hard. He's a very athletic kid. Probably, right up there as the most athletic, player on the lineup. And he uses it. He steals. He got a stolen base in this one. I know he got a quote unquote caught stealing in Sunday, which I guess we can talk about that later. But anyways, got to move on past that. So it is good that Buffington can come in and really be a second catcher. You're going to need a second catcher kind of regardless, right? Just the nature of the position, especially when you get around tournament time. But the other player you mentioned was Anthony Quigley. He's a guy that I would really, really like to see kind of progress and really get into this lineup because I think he brings something in terms of his speed that maybe no one else in the lineup is bringing. And I think that's where we see him coming as a pinch runner too when Betancourt gets on late. He's very fast. I mean, he can really move. He can really change the game. And so again, it was really good to see him. Any you guys have any final thoughts on Saturday?
Nope.
Yeah, the only
Oh, go
other
ahead.
thing is, go ahead.
No, go ahead, buddy.
Okay. Yeah, I was gonna say, with Quigley's, he was such a highly rated prospect coming out of high school too, and he's the full package. He's a five-tool player, and like you said, really interesting to see how he progresses. But one other thing I wanted to mention too was with Lance Triple, I think it'd be really interesting to see at the end of the year. How many base runners get stolen bases off of him versus how many stolen bases he gets himself on the base path? I think
Yeah.
that'll be an interesting follow-up at the end of the season.
I love that. That's so cool. Yeah.
We'll track that one. We'll keep
Heck yeah.
that one come tournament time. Well, we'll go on to Sunday. Sunday, honestly, Sunday hurt me way worse than Saturday. A, obviously, because it means we lost the series versus being able to win it. But B, you just felt like we were fighting some just bad bounces and just bad adverse situations. I know there were some questionable calls in this one, especially early. And I'll just kind of address my side of that first. We can just get it out of the way. I don't know what was going on, but it felt like to me with how long the reviews were taking And really, both sides. I think there was a play at first that Rice was really upset about that they didn't get overturned. But it almost just felt like to me like this crew chief was just not going to overturn anything. And that was kind of like a stance. Like, you guys want challenge? That's cool. We're not going to overturn it because I know we usually start with pitchers. We'll kind of flip it for this one just because I've already gone on my soapbox rant. But I feel like, it was just kind of weird. And I feel like it felt like it set us back. We had to overcome it, and really, we never did. And offense never got going in terms of scoring runs. I mean, we outhit them. Just weird. Overall, weird. Jay, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm with you. And this is one of those things where this team has to learn. They have to learn that when you go on the road, regardless of what the competition is, but regardless of what their record is, you're going to get terrible calls. And sometimes it's not just 9 on 9. Sometimes it's all 10 on 9, 11, 12, 13 on 9. You just don't know. So the ability to kind of compartmentalize what's going on around you, not let those calls get you flustered. And then continue to put your best foot forward and sometimes beat more than just the opposition. Is it fair? No, but life's not fair. And that's something that you have to do. Like, this is you're looking to check things off in the checkbox when it comes to a young baseball team. And one of the things you have to do is you have to go on the road and you have to win a game where it seems like everything is going against you. And I'd love to see a similar situation next season. Same spot. On the road, quote unquote, inferior opponent, and the calls are going against your way, and the Bulls dig deep and find a way to win. They weren't able to do that on Sunday, and that's why they lost the game and the series.
Yeah, and just to add on to that, I think the besides the questionable reviews and stuff like that, the bigger conspiracy to me is who planted a full-blown wasp's nest in the Bulls dugout that delayed the start of the game? Because I think there was just some weird juju going on that day, and it just obviously didn't end up
My
turning
guy
out the
grabbed
way it
those
should have.
barehanded.
What a beast! What a
Yeah, for sure.
beast!
I'm not even like, go ahead, Matt. Sorry.
No, that's funny. I saw that video on 11.7 podcast, but that was crazy too. But overall, just my overall thoughts on the game. Pitching actually wasn't that bad. There was a few costly errors in the field as well. On the game in itself, we only gave up 2 earned runs. I thought Jack Nedrow did a great job, as we've seen him do consistently throughout the season. Only gave up 1 earned run and really filled that role of that long reliever role that we really rely on him for. The one thing too that's kind of unfortunate about this past weekend was the fact that we obviously didn't have Bryce Archie due to the spring football practice. That's something that hopefully in the next less than 2 weeks from now we'll be able to not have to deal with that anymore for the rest of the season. I do think that could have affected at least the outcome on Saturday. It would have been nice to have him to come in and relieve DeCardenas at some point. But overall, we did have enough hits to win the ball game. But I think one of the glaring issues that I've seen throughout, a good amount of our losses in the season is just the overall amount of runners that we leave on base. And in this particular case, when you end up losing the ball game by only 3 runs and you leave 7 on base, that's really an unfortunate situation.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and like I said, it was just a weird day. And I think it's kind of like, Jay alluded to, it's one of those teaching moments for a coach where you say, look, guys, some things don't go your way. Sometimes it's a weird day and you have got to settle down and go pitch by pitch and battle your way out of it. And I just think it got to us. I think the compounding off, the up and down from Friday to Saturday, and then immediately things just start getting funny. Young team got some growing to do. You did mention the pitching. Matt Goldenbaum will get the kind of opener start, goes 1.1, and then Jack Nedrow, logs in a solid 6 innings. We've seen him do this in that kind of bulk position. We've seen him in the starter role. Jay, do you think we might see him in a traditional starter role again this season?
I don't know, man. I don't know. I think what we're kind of seeing now is that these guys are being identified. These guys are being identified as short guys and long guys. I think coach likes what he's seen when it comes to DeCardenas and Nedro coming in after quote unquote openers. And when Bryce comes back, does he get the start on Saturday? I would say yes. I would think yes. I would think that he gets the ball after Corey Brewer Friday night. And then, who will be the guy? I'm trying to think of who would come in. I think Archie is more like DeCardenas rather than Nedro. So I would think Nedro is the guy you save. Well, I think Nedro might be the guy that comes in after Archie now because you want to give a different look to those guys. So, maybe Jorge ends up being the guy that you go to Sunday and then you start mixing in with Golden Bomb and some of these other guys and Brown. So, I'm excited. I'm excited to see what happens there. And you have a guy that can throw 95 like Archie. I mean, that's just it's amazing. And the kid's unflappable as well. He doesn't get freaked out if there's bad, runners on base or anything like that.
No, and I think I brought that up in a podcast a long time ago when we were talking about him coming. I said, him being a quarterback is going to play an advantage. And I think you see a lot of the real big time kind of pitchers, if you kind of look through some of their backgrounds, you're going to find a lot of quarterbacks, right? And I think there's something too when you have to be the guy that's on that bump, knowing everything's going to go through you. And I think it's likened to when you're the guy under center and you get that snap, knowing everything's going to run through you. You mess up, everything's going to go bad. It's the same kind of thing. It's that same mental battle. So I agree. I am very excited to see Archie come back after spring football. I was getting to a point where I was kind of glad that he did not make this trip. I worry about shoulder fatigue kind of going through both, especially when we're when we have him. We don't want him to go one or one two. We kind of want him to be an ex and so again, you worry about the shoulder fatigue. I don't know if they're counting passes the way that baseball counts pitches. I know that was always a battle in my high school, because I know the small town high school I was coaching at, they were not counting passes that our starting shortstop was throwing, or our pitchers were throwing. I was like, hey, like we kind of want them healthy when they get to us. But anyways, yeah, so that's gonna cap up the weekend. Any final thoughts? I do want to say one thing about Rice. They made an awkward kind of coaching change. I don't know the I know I've never really seen it to where a guy gets let go and the next guy kind of gets brought in immediately, not even on an interim basis. Like, this is your program, but they're young, they're good, and Pierce is going to get them rolling sooner rather than later. And this could be one of the weekends they look back on and say, hey, this was a catalyst turnaround weekend for us when we kind of started to see things get right. Hopefully, we look at it as a catalyst to where, hey, guys, we got to get things right now. Because we're still in a position to do something. You guys have any final thoughts? Jay, we'll start with you.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And again, this is a it's a venerable program, one that it's weird to see them in the standings at that low, right? Like it's just like well, it doesn't seem right. When the conferences were changed, when everything, the American was formed and Rice was in there, that's the first thing that I thought of, Rice baseball, because that's I remember growing up, Rice was that school of the Rice Owls, and I just remember how badass the uniforms were. And then to see how kind of this year has unfolded, you're like, that's not the Rice that I know. You know what I mean? So it's for them. I mean, it's probably that probably wouldn't come at the benefit of USF, but for Rice fans out there, they probably deserve better than they're getting. And I think college baseball is probably better if Rice is one of the better teams in this conference for sure.
Absolutely. Real quick, Matt, before I get to you, I just want to say, is the Rice pinstripes with the old English R, is that not one of like the cooler aesthetics in college
Clean,
baseball?
clean, man, clean.
I love it. Anyways, Matt, what are your final thoughts on the weekend?
Yeah, just to add on that too, is just the overall facilities that they have, I was extremely impressed by. And they have all these bleachers in left field, and that program is, obviously, it's had a lot of success in the past, but it's really gonna it has a lot of potential to get back to that point as well.
Absolutely. Well, we will move on now. Speaking of Rice and our athletic American Athletic Conference opponents and mates. It was kind of an interesting weekend for the American. I mean, not only did you have Rice would upset us by all intents and purposes, Memphis is going to upset FAU. Charlotte is going to what some could consider an upset over ECU based on tradition. I think there's kind of been some reports coming out of ECU that maybe things aren't cheery as they've been in the past, and so you're hoping maybe they can turn it around. Tulane will also go over UAB, and then finally, what I believe was kind of a surprise sweep was UTSA over Wichita. Not necessarily, knock on UTSA. I just thought Wichita was a little better than what they've shown, and but maybe UTSA is that buzzsaw. Jay, what stood out to you when you look at these overall last week?
Yeah, I mean that was the Wichita State going down, and just you're wondering that going into that series last weekend. Okay, is UTSA for real? Is Wichita State as bad as their record says there? Because you think if it flips, right? Wichita State's 7-8, they're 7-5. UTSA, we're having a completely different conversation today. And then East Carolina. I mean, you look at them, and that's been the one team that I circle every single year on the calendar outside of the. That weird smelling school down I-4. But East Carolina is the one, team I look at and I go, they're gonna have a big bopper, big left-handed batter that they're gonna have to try to keep in the yard if they're playing it in Tampa. And it is kind of weird to see them at 7-5 through, 12 conference games and 21-16 overall, and to see them fall to Charlotte. This is good for the league. It is. It's good for the league. It's good to have some parity in there and to have some different names at the top. But I said it before. To be able to see a team like USF where, that nobody had them at second, right? Nobody had them second in the conference. So regardless of what the preseason prognostication is, that's why you go out and play the game. So I like it. I think it's good for the I think it's good for the conference. And this should tell Mitch Hanna's and the team, like, hey, it's ours for the taking. There's no we're not missing no conference tournament this year, but let's try to go into this damn thing with the number one seed. There's an opportunity to do that.
Absolutely. Matt, what stood out to you last week's games?
I think the most surprising result, and you mentioned it before, is the fact that Memphis was able to win the series against Florida Atlantic. I think one of the, series that I usually have circled on my calendar is that series against FAU, and they're always a very tough ball club, and the fact that a team that we saw, just last week, lose three of their players in one game, was able to battle some adversity and take two out of three against a pretty good FAU team. I thought that was really interesting to see.
Matt, I forgot about that. They did have their center fielder go down, and then had to turn around, and play a tough team in FAU. So that was a big win for them. Well, Matt, you and our friend Joe, you guys had your fingers on the pulse for last week. Y'all were 3-1. I did not. I had a lot more faith in Wichita State, and I thought ECU was going to turn it around, and they did not. So I was 1-3. But hey, next week is a brand new week, so we will get to those picks. In a little bit, but real quick, we talked about the standings briefly. Looking at them, I'll kind of run through them. UTSA sits at the top at 10-2, followed by South Florida and Charlotte 8-4. Tulane and East Carolina sit at 7-5. Florida Atlantic at 6-6. UAB and Wichita State are at 4-8 and 3-9 for Memphis and Rice as they round it out. Just real quick note, look, the bottom two teams both beat a team in the top half of the conference last week. Just kind of, I think that, you talk about the parity. I think there is a lot of parity. I think the looking at these standings, I think you look at our matchup with Charlotte and you kind of circle that and be like, well, hey, there's the matchup of the week as we go forward. And does anything else stand out to you, Jay?
No, I think that's the big matchup, and I want to see South Florida be able to get back to, winning games, but just taking momentum from Friday and winning this series. And I know how Coach Mitch he puts an onus on taking care of business on Saturday, man. You're looking at Sunday completely different if and obviously we're talking as if they'd win Friday night, but man, you do so much more with your bullpen, your in a much better spot as far as getting position players. You're okay with getting Lance Triple off his feet. You're okay with getting Stuart Puckett in there. Maybe you get Quigley more at bats and Buffington and So yeah, I think it's a big weekend for South Florida. Can you reestablish that you're one of the better teams in the conference, or was last weekend a sign of like, you're about to hit the skids, unfortunately?
Absolutely. Real quick before I kick it over to Matt, guys, have your popcorn ready because Gillespie versus Braun on Friday night, it's going to be magic. Matt, what are you thinking?
Yeah, definitely. That's the matchup that highlights this upcoming weekend. Really excited to see that unfold. I think Charlotte's been pretty hot as of late too. They've won those first two games of that series, and I think ECU was really lucky to grab that last game.
Yeah, man. Like I said, I've just kind of I haven't seen anything really substantiated necessarily, but I've just kind of seen some little things on the Twitter sphere that just things are not as they've always been, in Greenville. And you hope that turns around, because the league's better when they're good. You don't want to see them. I think they've been swept a couple times in conference this week. So I mean, it's really not even like it's kind of trickling down. It's almost like it's going down fast, but. Next week is a new week. Chance for people or teams to kind of get things going. Real quick, I do want to look at the midweek slate that we have coming up, which will be starting Tuesday, which may or may not be when you're listening to this podcast. Big games, big in-state games. Charlotte at North Carolina, Florida Atlantic at Miami. Us South Florida will go to Florida State. You've also got a Houston matchup with Houston at Rice. Rice kind of hoping they can build some momentum, and then UAB at Alabama. All these are big P5 matchups. These midweeks are kind of a chance for the conference as a whole to kind of build their RPI and kind of up our chances of getting more teams into the tournament. But I think there's some real interesting matchups here outside of ours, of course. Jay, which one stands out to you?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be UAB Alabama, right? Being able to go into Tuscaloosa and to try to knock off the Crimson Tide. Of course, Florida Atlantic and Miami is a big matchup, and you're looking at all these interstate rivalries. I know New Orleans and Tulane is a matchup that that's not friendly either. But yeah, I mean, it all goes down back to us, right? In Tallahassee, if watching the Noles this year, it's just been such a funky season for them. They've won some big games. And then they've had some big offensive outbursts, and then all of a sudden they poop the bed, and they just get absolutely tomahawked. We know what they bring to the table when it comes to the weekend starters, but midweek games, I mean, they're ripe for the picking. So you're not going to see a Jamie Arnold tomorrow night. You're not going to see a Joey Vellini. So if you're USF, you got to go in there with your confidence at an all-time high. Like, these are the games that, if you win, like, let's say USF wins this game against Florida State, and then they take two of three or they sweep this weekend. Now people are looking, going, okay, they are legit. They are legit, maybe not national contender yet, but that is a team that we should really be penciling in for a favorite coming out of this conference. Mitch Hanna seems to be very well received. A lot of people appreciate what he did at Indiana State. And if he can make some early waves, in his first year here at USF, I think it's almost like, and I want to make the analogy of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, winning a Super Bowl in year one for Tristan Wirfs and Antoine Winfield Jr. put them on the map in year one. So now their entire career, people are going to look at them like a champion, and they're going to look favorably on them. So they're going to win Defensive Player of the Years. They're going to get Pro Bowls and things like that. Where you saw on the other side, it took a little while for Mike Evans and Levante David to get into the conversation because they were on such bad teams. That same type of impact Mitch Hanus can bring to USF. All eyes are on him. They're like, wow, this guy did great things hosting super freaking regionals at Indiana States. And now he's here at USF, and everybody knows what the hotbed of baseball is here in the Sunshine State. If he can have big time success in year one, I just think it would have such a profound impact on the direction of this program.
Absolutely. I think it definitely buys you time. I think when you find success early, you maybe can get past that 3 to 5 year window where we see a lot of coaches maybe get moved on from. Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, I think a couple of those series that really stand out to me, or rather midweek games, is the New Orleans at Tulane. New Orleans actually beat Tulane earlier in the season, so this would be the second of the two matchups. So I'll be interested to see that one. And then also UAB is actually very good in midweek games. They've taken 2 out of 2 versus Auburn already this year. So it'll be definitely interesting to see how they stack up against Alabama. And then obviously we got that big matchup against Florida State. And I think in our first matchup against them, we played them really well. We ended up losing 6-3, but that matchup was really tight until the later innings and got away from us a little bit. But Jay was saying that they're not gonna throw out Arnold, they're not gonna throw out Bellini. And they've been susceptible during those midweek games. I think they dropped one earlier in the year to Mercer. So there's some opportunity there that they're still a top 30 RPI team. So that could definitely go a long way into bringing that momentum that you guys were talking about earlier.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's, our matchup with Florida State. I think it's probably the biggest matchup for the conference. We don't have very many teams that are, that have their RPI. And so you got to take advantage of those opportunities, especially a big quad one win for us. But we'll look at that one a little bit later on. Real quick, we'll move on now to the next week conference games. We'll do our pick 'em. I'm going to look to redeem myself a little bit. Starting here with the first one, East Carolina. They're going to have to look to try to right the ship sooner rather than later, or I think it's going to get sunk. But they go down to Birmingham to play UAB. Jay, as the guest, we'll let you pick first. Who do you have in this one?
Tough to go against East Carolina, and UAB. You have to wonder if, man, what if they just said about the success they've had against Auburn? What if they beat Alabama? They're going to be flying high. Home game, East Carolina. Against my better judgment, I'm going to go with UAB because I just talked myself into it. I was going to say East Carolina, but now I'm talking myself into UAB to be able to win those midweek games. And even if they just compete with Alabama, I think they're going to be able to kind of carry that over their hosting. I'm going to go with UAB in this one.
That's a good pick. Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm gonna tail off of Jay right here and say that UAB is gonna take the series at home 2-1.
Jay, I'm fighting the same internal battle you are because like every logical part of me says that this is UAB's series. It's at
Right.
home. ECU is crumbling, but then at some point you feel like Godwin and Norby and the guys in that lineup, they've got to get it right at some point, right? And so I'm down big. I'm just going to go down with the ship. I'm going to take ECU in this one.
There you go. There you go, buddy. There
I'm
you
going to
go.
do it. It's too good. He's too good of a coach. There's too much talent. They're not that bad. They've got to get it right at some point. And you feel like they're gonna. You think maybe they've done enough damage now that they understand that, hey, that at-large bid that we just kind of held in our pocket for the last like 5, 6 years or even longer, probably, we don't have that anymore. It's gonna get desperation time, at ECU. I think that's got to kick up. I'm gonna do it. ECU, here we go. Next matchup, Wichita State at FAU. Both teams kind of suffering some tough losses. Both going to try to get it right. Jay, what do you think?
I'll go with Florida Atlantic with this one. Again, Wichita State. I've been dogging them in East Carolina this year after following them. Watch, they're probably they watch. They'll both sweep on the road this week and make me look bad. But no, I'm going to go with Florida Atlantic in this one.
Yeah, go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Florida Atlantic will take this series, but I do think Wichita State will grab a game. I think the one thing that we're not considering is I think Memphis might actually be better than their record represents. And I've had the opportunity to listen to some of their post-game conferences that they have with their coach. And everything that he says, you really have a strong feeling that he's going to help them turn it around. And, I think with their beating of USF last week in that Sunday game and the overall conference series win this past weekend, they might be turning a corner. And with that, Wichita State has an opportunity to get a game from FAU, but FAU did play a really tough opponent this past week.
Yep, I'm gonna follow suit on this one. I gotta sell all my stock in Wichita State. I went out on a limb for them last week. I said they're better than their record. They're gonna get UTSA at home, and they let me down pretty hard. So I'm gonna have to pick FAU. I think Like you said, Matt, I think Memphis is a little better than their record. Like it was, I mentioned before, I think Rice is better than their record. I think the whole conference is really good. And so, at home, both teams looking to get it right. I think FAU is going to be the one that does it. Moving on to the next one, is a tough one for me. I'll let y'all know why a little bit later, but Tulane at UTSA, Kings of the conference this season, going up against kind of, two-time defending tournament winners, Tulane. Jay, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I'm gonna go with UTSA. You gotta ride the hot hand here. And I wasn't overly thrilled with what I saw from Tulane so far this season. So I know where they are, but you get used to, and I guess this has kind of been the story of the year, where you kind of have a certain level of where you think these teams are at. And I know their conference record looks, they're fourth in the conference right now, but I just didn't come away like blown away by what they had. And I think UTSA, like the proof is in the pudding, man. They're in first place, so I'm gonna go with them. Go with the Roadrunners.
Good pick, good pick. Mac, what do you think?
I'm actually gonna stray from Jay here, and I think that UTSA, they've been hot, but I feel like every hot team, I feel like eventually they face some level of adversity or disappointment, and I feel like that's what's gonna happen this weekend with Tulane. They're a more experienced team, and I think they've been in situations before that gives them the advantage here in a big series, and I think they're gonna come away with the victory.
Yeah, as I mentioned, this one's tough for me because, Tulane is a team. If you're someone that's been listening to our podcast for the last couple of years, Tulane is a team that I identified early in the both previous seasons, saying, "Look, this is the team right here." I know ECU is the cream of the crop, but this Tulane team is going to do something, and they end up winning the tournament both years. And this team that we're seeing this season, it has a lot of familiar names with Lombardi. I know they even picked up one from ECU in a transfer that was pretty good. And so, Flada, their Friday night guy, has been really good. So the talent's there, and the pedigree is there to be able to do it. But for some reason, this year, this Tulane team doesn't necessarily have the grit that I think I saw from the Tulane teams. Early on, I can remember in the 2024 season, there was a Northwestern like early game, and I mean, they were down, nothing was going right. They managed to turn it around and pull out the victory, and I remember that being like the catalyst for me being like, this team might have something. I don't think they have that this year. On the flip side, I think like everybody said, UTSA does have that hot hand. You do feel like they're gonna drop a series somewhere. I think Tulane is probably a team that could sneak in and get one. But I don't think I can pick them. I'm going to go with UTSA in this one, which will bring us to the final one. If it wasn't for us in Charlotte this week, I think this would actually, even though both teams are at the bottom, I think this would be a candidate for matchup of the week because I think Rice is getting better every week. I think they're kind of going to want to show something. I think Memphis is a little better than what their record thinks. Tough matchup. What do you think, Jay?
I'm gonna go with Rice. I think they're gonna be able to carry over what they did against USF and take it on the road with them. And Memphis losing some of the guys, in the last couple of weeks. I just feel like now this is for the taking for Rice. And they, here in Boca Chica, the second baseman, I think that's one of the better players that I've seen in the conference so far this season. So I'm gonna go with Rice.
Absolutely. Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, definitely agree with Boca Chica. That guy really impressed me, and that home run he hit this past weekend was absolutely crushed. But I'll say, I'm gonna ride with Memphis in this series just because they've had a little bit more sustained recent success with their victory against us on last Sunday, and then ended up carrying that over into this past weekend. Against a pretty solid team. So I think that Memphis will win this, especially being that it is a home series for them.
Yeah, Memphis at home. I really want to give them the nod, but I think I'm gonna go with Jay on this one. I'm gonna pick Rice, but I am gonna give this caveat. I think Memphis wins Friday night. Seth Garner, a former Tennessee Pitcher of the Year, Mr. Baseball, or I don't know what they call it. Essentially, he was the best pitcher in Tennessee for his class, coming out of high school. Very highly rated recruit. Pitched well against us. We don't really know what's going on Friday night with Rice. We know Hickson was the typical starter. I don't know that he was the best pitcher we saw last weekend for them, so I don't know what's gonna. Again, I don't really know what happens with them on Friday night. So I think Memphis wins Friday, but I do think the bats of Rice kind of will carry over that hot streak. Trayton Rank for them is somebody who was not hitting very well for them, but he hits. He just rakes against Tampa. He's from Tampa. I guess that might have something to do with it. But they threw his numbers up against us, and it was unbelievable. It was like 14, 15 hits. I don't know. So maybe he stays hot. He's a really, a big part of their lineup that I think could pick it up. So again, I think Memphis takes Friday, taking Rice for the series though. Well, that will carry that on. We'll take a real quick look at these 11.7 mid-major rankings. The guys kept some faith. The guys from 11.7 again, they cover mid-major baseball really, really well. Give them a look and a like and a follow if you can. Drop the Bulls from 14th to 17th for this week. UC Irvine Anteaters have been number one for just about the entire season. Top five will be Troy Trojans, Coastal Carolina, Western Kentucky Hilltoppers. We talked to them about them last week. They're still hot. The Dallas Baptist Patriots will round out the top five. Real quick, Jay, I'll kick it over to you. We don't want to spend too much time on it, but what stands out when you see this? I know it's a mid-major ranking, so it's not the big one, but what kind of stands out for you?
And just the fact that there's a lot of love for USF, right? Only going down three spots. I mean, a lot of people would look at a team like USF where they are in the division or where they are in the conference and losing to a lowly Rice team and really penalize them for it. But that's not what we saw. We saw them just drop three spots. So it's just that's just another inclination or indication, rather, that there's a lot of respect for this team. And I don't know if they necessarily earned it yet, but we'll take it. But there's a lot of belief in South Florida, and I think it's only dropping three spots. That tells me if they win a couple of games this weekend, they'll probably go up even higher.
Absolutely. Matt, what do you think, man?
Yeah, just agreeing with that too. I think I was slightly surprised that we only dropped three spots, and we still got a lot of conference opponents that are pretty high on this list, but not quite as high as we are. FAU being number 18 and Tulane being number 20. But one thing I also saw too, just to briefly glance over this, was they went over some potential hosting mid-major programs, and one of the programs that they had on that list was UTSA, which is really interesting, especially when you consider their ballpark. I don't think it's even up to the hosting standards,
Ohio Minor League
but
Park.
yeah, it would probably be at a minor league park, I would imagine. But yeah, overall, happy to see the Bulls are still on this, and we have an opportunity to move up this weekend.
Yeah, I think what really surprised me, and I don't even know how it got past me, but I mean Stetson moving up to nine. I didn't realize the Hatters were kind of on this list. But there's an opponent for us that kind of like moving up. And again, these aren't necessarily official rankings. They don't have anything to do with RPI. But again, it's about the kind of the status, which means a lot when some of these things, in terms of voters and stuff like that. I do want to say UC Irvine Anteaters have been on number one on this list for a long time, and I have had an opportunity to catch them a few times because they are still playing when we're done. So if you got that ESPN Plus subscription and you happen to catch UC Irvine playing, give them a peek. They're a really good club. And also another club I want to point out, try to point one out every week. McNeese Cowboys have won 12 straight. And they are shooting up this list, 24-5, almost the best record outside of Western Kentucky, sitting at that 31-5, which is another team, Matt, that they're talking about potential hosting, which will have to use a minor league park. I think there's a potential for three, four, maybe, well, that's a lot, maybe two or three hosts out of these mid majors. Going to be really fun to see. All right, guys. Well, we will kind of move on and look at our midweek preview tonight or tomorrow, depending on when you're listening to this podcast. Tuesday at 6 p.m. The Bulls will travel to Tallahassee to take on the Florida State Seminoles. This game will be on the ACC network, so you will not be able to watch it on the ESPN Plus. You can catch it on Bulls Unlimited with our friends providing some amazing coverage there. Real quick look at Florida State. They're 28-7 overall, 7-3 in their last 10. RPI currently sits at 16. So, like I said before, we're not going to have very many opportunities to play a team that is sitting at their current RPI, even though I guess it's about where they finished, not necessarily where they are now. But we did play them earlier this season. It was a 6-2 loss. Pretty good game for us. Matt, I'll actually kick it to you first on this one. You mentioned something about the starter from their first midweek. We might not see him for this one. Is that right?
I think they're going to be throwing out. I think they're going to be throwing out Evan Crest again. I could be wrong, but the one thing I will say is I think from this outing that originally that Bryce Archie had, he only went 3 innings. I think that's when he wasn't necessarily built up yet. It was like the first week or two of the season. I expect him to be able to go a lot more than 52 pitches and be able to see him for 5, maybe 6 innings, especially getting the break this past weekend as well. But overall, like you said, they're a very good opponent. I thought they were actually top 30. They're actually 16, so they had a great weekend this past weekend. But as Jay alluded to earlier, we're not going to face any of their top arms for this upcoming game.
Yeah, man, midweeks are crazy, You never really know what's going to happen. I don't really even know. Do we know if we're going to have Archie for this one, or with the ramping up of spring practices, is he maybe going to take an extended break? I'm not sure. But like you said, I don't think we see him for very long,
No.
just depending on that. Jay, what stands out to you about this one?
Yeah, I just think the opportunity that they have in front of them, if they realize the moment, you have a chance now to this will like if USF wins this game, this is the biggest win. I don't care who's playing. This is one of the biggest wins, if not the biggest wins in the entire country. And it really plants their flag in the ground. And then it'll show everybody, like, hey, we're here. We may be ahead of schedule, but we're ready to go. And I like the way they've been swinging the bats. I really do. And I think you go up there. There's just something in the head of Florida State this year. When it goes bad, it goes really bad. So, keep Alex Lodice, keep him away. He can hurt you. But if you get an opportunity to score early on in this game, put the pressure on Florida State. All the pressure will be on them. USF's playing with house money. They can go toe to toe with these guys. So I'm looking forward. I'll be tuning in tomorrow. That's for sure.
And you just mentioned it real quick, but how crazy is that Lodice story? Him and his cousin are both come from smaller schools. I believe one's from West Florida, and I believe the other one is from Georgia. But both of them transferred to ACC schools, and I believe they're both the best hitters in the conference. Absolutely crazy. Both playing shortstop too. So, and just interesting stuff. I think this game became much bigger after Saturday and Sunday, because our RPI took a huge hit. I mean, it was taking hits winning just because of the way the strength of schedule was working, and then so it took huge hits after the two losses. And so this game just really became much more important for us because, as I've mentioned a couple of times, we just don't have many opportunities against teams with their RPI ranking, and we're gonna need a win there to maybe soften that blow. Again, there's enough on our schedule, especially we're probably gonna need to root for, other than this week, we're gonna need to root for Charlotte, we're gonna need to root for UTSA, we're gonna need to. Maybe UTSA and another team. We're going to need to pick a couple of teams to maybe kind of build their RPI stature. Hopefully, two teams that we beat, not two teams that we lose to. But we just got to kind of keep creeping up into that area where we can get into an at-large bid. I really hate having to just hope for the tournament to get in. It's a subject for a different podcast, but the whole system, I think, is a little jacked up. But again, you just hope we can get a win tomorrow night or tonight, depending on how you're listening to this, and really just kind of soften the blow from that.
I
Go
was going to
ahead.
add in there as well, along with the teams that you mentioned that we should be rooting for. We also have to be rooting for Iowa. We have to be rooting for Maryland. We got to be rooting for Georgia Southern. All teams that we had some good success against earlier in the season, those RPI standings definitely will help too.
Especially the ones on
Good
the
point.
road.
Yep, good point.
Yeah, I did notice that. Well, guys, I think we've gotten to the end of our agenda here. Little bit over our initial time. I do apologize, but thought it's been a great show so far. Any final thoughts? Jay, in your final thoughts, go ahead and let everybody know kind of what you're doing with your podcast and kind of everything, all the info they need for that as well.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate that. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun with you guys, and looking forward to seeing what USF can do the rest of the season. Don't know how many games that I'll be on the call for, either on Bulls Unlimited or ESPN Plus. But make sure you follow me on all social media platforms at Jay Retcher, JAYRECHER. The Jay Retcher podcast is live every day at noon on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. So, yeah, all the information. I'll be live from Amalie Arena every time the Lightning have a home game. And yeah, never know. I sometimes do it from the broadcast booth at the USF Baseball Stadium. You just never know where I'm going to be. But if there's an event happening in the Tampa Bay area when it comes to sports, there's a good chance that I'm there. So, yeah, this has been fun, man. Thank you guys for having me. And yeah, at Jay Retcher on all social media platforms.
Absolutely. We're going to get some links in these social media posts that we have. So everybody, you're going to be able to find him, find his podcast, find everything you need at the click of a button. We'll make sure that happens. Before I log us off here, Matt, do you have any final thoughts, bud?
Looking to see a bounce back on Tuesday here. I hope to see the Bulls are fired up, have a little fire lit under their butt, and hopefully we get a big upset. I'm looking forward to that.
Absolutely. We definitely need to get things turned around. Be on the lookout. Like we mentioned earlier, there's a big series coming up for USF. It is back home in Tampa. Mark and John are going to be breaking that series down on the second podcast this week. That's going to be coming to you probably Thursday or Wednesday night. Again, we'll get that information out to you. Jay, before we go, you mentioned, your calls on Bulls Unlimited and ESPN Plus, man. I just want to say, whether it's you, Jim, Ryan, Derek sometimes is on these calls as well, especially with the radio. Just thank you guys, because we get an absolute top-notch broadcast
Thank you. Thank
with
you.
great analysts and everything. And I it only thing you need to do is try to watch an away game for some of these games that we've
Yeah, man.
been in. And it's not even just the production value, because you can say, well, sometimes they don't have the money, man. Like, sometimes you can just tell when a commentator or a color a play-by-play or a color guy, you can tell when they care enough to do the back research,
Right.
to know what's going on. And I think away fans and Bulls fans, we are spoiled personally, but away fans, I think they get a great coverage. And again, just watch an away game if you don't believe me. But again, thank you guys for that coverage.
Thank you, buddy.
Again, tune into that, guys. Well, that's all the time we got. Like I said, make sure you're liking and subscribing our podcast. Check the links. You can like and subscribe to Jay's podcast. We absolutely appreciate him coming and giving his time for us, and we will invite him back whenever that will work out. But until then, like I said, be on the lookout for the breakdown of the Charlotte game. And hopefully we catch you at the red, everybody. Go Bulls.
Go Bulls.
Go Bulls.